Andrew Solomon, whose Atlas of Depression he calls the Noonday Demon, is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show, and Bill Russell wants to talk next.
You had the grace early on to say, and there's a paraphrase, I think, that you didn't write this book as catharsis, that this is not your
And
way
if you
to,
had, it didn't work.
which you succeed, I think, which is, to me, a high compliment. Because this is so subjective, as you said early on, because we don't have overt, tangible measures, we can't send something off to the lab and know anything necessarily, it seems that that ability to personal report, to have at least a reference that you can cite, that you can take these interesting theories, the patriots as you characterize them, the various theories that they have, and test them against yourself, but also, and again, I think part of the genius is this, testing it with other people. Mm-hmm. And this is essentially a good part of this is conversations with other people that have had comparable but different experiences. Did you know that that's what you were going to have to do, or did you have to sort of feel your way into that?
Well, the structure of the book took a long time to emerge. I think structure always does. I mean, I've said to some people that it took me about 4 years to write the first chapter and figure out the table of contents, and then it took me about a year to write the rest of the book, which is a slight exaggeration. But anyway, one moves much faster once one knows what one's doing. I felt I had to just try to hear as much about depression and what people had done as I could so that I could understand, even in my own experience, what was universal and necessary to describe and what was personal and rather irrelevant to everyone else. And so that I could, by presenting an amalgam of different people and their different experiences, give readers from various backgrounds and with various personalities and in various conditions characters with whom to empathize.
You say 6 or 7 different ways you got to keep your sense of humor to get through all of this. Mm. And I think the line that will go with me always is, losing your mind like losing your car keys is a real hassle. That's funny. But throughout this experience, there is that sense of the come on, guys, we'll get through this. Mm. And you have the nerve to go to the place where the people who can't get through it, who choose suicide as part of the depressive process. You talk about suicides come in, you categorize them 4 different ways. But your nerve in talking about suicide, again, in a society that doesn't want to hear it, is an important part of this story as well, if you're to keep people from doing it and if you're to give them permission that this is the ultimate primitive right. Did that get you into all kinds of trouble to be talking about suicide?
Well, it's stressful and upsetting talking to people who are suicidal, and I know that there are difficulties in reading that chapter because what it describes is so bleak, but I was trying to represent a reality that's out there, and the rate of suicide is so much higher than most of us realize. There's so much suicide in our society, and it's terribly important, I think, to get the discussion out in public about it so that some preventative measures can be taken.
You say, if I understood you correctly, that more young men killed themselves during the Vietnam era than, and maybe you really meant in the Vietnam War. All of this is to say a lot of people choose to kill themselves.
Yes, more Americans died of suicide during the Vietnam War than died in action. More Americans died of suicide during the height of the AIDS crisis than died of AIDS. The rate of suicide is very, very high. It's one of the leading causes of death in this country.
Big secret. Those are two. Let's see, this will also be news, won't it? The ability, let's flip that to the other side, because if people want to know more about it, they can go to a really interesting book I've just read. Your ability to find hope and to find answers to this reflects a lot of things that are going on in the larger pursuit of how to alleviate some of this pain, doesn't it? I mean, the short course, what do you do if you're really depressed?
Well, the first thing I always say to people is to seek help, that isolation severely exacerbates the depression. Seek help. If you can seek professional help, go to a doctor, better go to a psychiatrist who will have more insight into it. I think the most expeditious way to bring about an immediate transformation is by taking medications. I think it's amazing that we now have the technology available to us to pull people back from the brink. And lots of people say, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel comfortable with medications. and they end up killing themselves. It's not as though this were just some funny, minor, irritating back pain that if you don't do anything about it for a while, you can deal with it later on. It's a very acute, scary condition that should be dealt with immediately. Having availed yourself of medications, assuming that they're helpful to you, and they are for most people, but not all people, I think you also need to go through some kind of a therapeutic process in which you try to identify what the sources of your depression are, how you feel about the depression, integrated, as we talked about earlier in the show, into a larger sense of yourself and your life. And then I think that having done all of that, it's also possible to pursue all kinds of alternative treatments, some of which have had very high rates of success. But the most important thing is to do something. And
which is also the hard thing for somebody in that condition, isn't it?
Yes, to do something soon is what I was going to say, because if you're depressed, you'll probably get more depressed as time goes on. You'll eventually get better even if you don't do anything, because depression is cyclical. But most people are aware that they're getting depressed long before they hit rock bottom. And when you're beginning to feel bad, it takes a certain amount of effort to go out and find yourself help and go to someone and ask for assistance. By the time that you've reached rock bottom, it's much more difficult. So do it soon, do it fast. As soon as you think you might be getting depressed, go and talk to someone. At worst, you'll find out you aren't really getting that depressed and you don't have to worry about it.
You start your book and this whole concept of thinking about depression by saying it is a lapse in the most fundamental need that humans have, which is to be loved. Is it really that simple?
I think that depression is very much related to love, because I think negative emotion, of which we have really still relatively little understanding, is very much involved with love. And that part of what you experience when you love someone is anticipatory sadness at the potential loss of that person. And without that feeling, it wouldn't be love as we know it. And without that feeling, mothers wouldn't protect their children, and lovers wouldn't hold on to each other in the night, and all kinds of other things that we think of as being fundamental to human emotion wouldn't happen. Part of what happens when you're depressed is that your own capacity both to give and receive love becomes severely compromised. And so people who are very depressed tend to feel isolated. They tend to feel alone. I'm often asked by people what they should do for people who are depressed. And I say, well, encourage them to take measures to get better and to seek help and so on. But also, just do whatever you can to mitigate their loneliness. They may say it's too stressful for them to have you sitting there in their room the whole time. Go sit right outside their room the whole time. But just make them aware all the time that they don't need to be alone, physically or profoundly.
One of the ways to understand what seems to be at least partially a cultural phenomenon, a social phenomenon, is to go outside of our own culture or society and see what happens in other societies. And you did that. You went several places, but the three that come to mind, one is Cambodia, and one of the most touching stories I've heard in a long time, and positive, once you get past the tears. You went to spend some time with Inuit, which put it in a whole nother box, and then you engaged in a healing ceremony in Africa that also
amazing
put things in a radically different context. And if you can, sort of encapsulate the experiences that came out of that.
Rather than me being rude to you, why don't you do that when we come back? This is Andrew Solomon. He's going to tell us more about all of these positive experiences coming out of depression when we return in a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. We hope you'll be with us.